All right, welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 28, and we are fresh off of coming back from New York City, where we spent about 48 hours. It feels like a blur to me, all of it, just maybe a little bit of a dream. How does it feel to you?
Tired. It's.
I guess you could say it's a daydream.
Oh, yes, which got no mention. It was exhausting.
Yeah, it was.
They allowed us to stay in the venue running around for longer. So
yeah, that was a big deal. Running around, and we just found couches to camp on and work. I think, I don't know, like we were there. I'm pretty sure we were like the very last people to leave. Not because we were just obsessive about it, but that like.
There's so much to do.
So much to do. So much to work on. We were just heads down on our laptops. Like I think we pushed out like 40 posts yesterday. So yeah, it was. It was crazy. But yeah, I think, I guess first I just want to dive in this episode into the three main tent poles of everything that was announced yesterday. First, let's do reverse. So let's start with Home Hub and then go to, actually, let's start with even less than that. Let's start with Chromecast and then go to Home Hub and then go to Pixel Slate and then go to Pixel 3. Pixel 3 is the one that deserves the least amount of time, because we've given it the most amount of minutes on this show already this year. So, so I guess we were just talking about the Chromecast. The Chromecast got a very little minor refresh, and it packs a few minor new features. I actually plugged mine in this morning. Everyone that was at the event walked away with a goodie bag, and the bare minimum goodie bag was you walked away with a Chromecast. And I plugged mine in this. Actually, I have the box right here. I plugged mine in this morning, and I wanted to confirm that the reason there is Bluetooth is because Google's, well, at least the primary reason right now, is because Google wanted to streamline the setup process. So as you may know, the last two Chromecasts have used kind of a hacky setup situation that involved connecting your phone to or connecting the Chromecast or connecting your phone to the Chromecast via Wi-Fi to set it up. And other devices like the Google Home have rather used Bluetooth so that you can do it more directly. And so now it uses Bluetooth for the initial setup process, and it's about three or four less steps. So that's the big change on that front. Another thing we just talked about was it's getting multi-room audio support, which is a big deal. And I guess the physical design is a little bit different, as we've already talked about. I tweeted that Google actually managed to keep one secret at this event, and that was this white small Chromecast. It's my favorite. What do you think about it?
That and the fact that the Home Hub had more colors for the secrets, really, of this event. But yeah, it's minor. I kind of like the black one because I know white is going to get dirty and the HDMI cable stays black. So...
not that it matters because it's going to be behind your TV anyway.
No. It still matters. You know it gets dirty.
But the Home Hub, man, the colors, like, they're gorgeous.
Cool. Yeah. And we going into the event, we were trying to figure out why Google would release a mint Home Mini at the very last second if there was the Home Hub. It wasn't going to adopt those colors, so mischief managed.
Yeah, the home mini situation just felt like a typical, like, we don't have time to really talk about this at the event, and so let's just make sure it doesn't get buried under everything else, because the Home Mini's a very important part of Google's AI play in general, because it's the most ubiquitous of their products at this point. So it just seemed like a strategic thing primarily, and then I don't know if I showed you guys, but there was like, they sent the press like this box that was like, it had a diffuser and essential oils in it and like all this stuff and a nightcap and stuff. And it was like, you know, just like have a spa day before the big rush of the event or whatever. And so, yeah, I think they did a pretty good job of publicizing that and getting the news out before the event, before it got buried under everything else. What was your, I mean, before we dive into the three main tent poles, what was your big like standout?
The smaller thing? Pixel 3, actually. It's going into the event, I wasn't too excited about the upcoming Pixels, but now that I've had time to play with it, the design is drastically so much better than last year's phone. The lack of gigantic bezels, and from the perspective of a device I'm using every single day, I think it's going to make a big difference for me in terms of like enjoying using my phone.
Yeah, I agree, but I guess I promised that we would talk about Pixel 3 last, so we can jump back into that in a minute. Google Home Hub. I think that this was probably my number one thing for this event, or maybe not the number one thing, maybe not the most impressive thing, but it was the biggest surprise, biggest delight. You know, surprise and delight. That's what the Google Home Hub was for me at this event. I was really expecting it to be kind of boring. It interestingly enough, it doesn't run Android things. I think Ron at Ars Technica confirmed that. So I guess what I'm getting at is it's more different than the smart displays that have launched already than it seems. And one of the things, the big things, was that I mentioned on the show that if they're going to call it Google Home Hub, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, that it would be, make more sense for it to be a true like hub for all of your smart display stuff. And I don't know why I didn't make the connection that maybe that was exactly what they were doing. Especially since I had heard previously that Google was working on making the Google Home app on the phone, you know, more of a hub for smart home stuff, which is what they did yesterday. And that kind of goes along with Google Home Hub and what they're calling Home View, which seems like it could have also been the name for the Google Home Hub itself. They could have called the Google Home Hub Google Home View, I think. But yeah, I think that was my big thing, primarily the colors, like you said. Like, I was so surprised. Well, first thing, I think looking at the renders and the leaks, it looks probably twice the size that it was.
Yeah.
It's so adorable. It's so cute and small and petite, and like, it just looked like a monster in those renders. And I'm so glad that those renders were like, they must have been early marketing stuff, because those were not really used at all yesterday in the official marketing material. And yeah, there were two colors. We knew about white and black. Those leaked, but we didn't know about the mint and the not pink, I guess, models. Coral, and those are my favorite. Coral? Yeah. Okay, well, they were gorgeous. Like, I definitely want the mint one. It's so, so nice.
Oh, here the color. Sand. It's called sand.
It is? Really?
Yes. Sand, aqua, chalk, and charcoal.
Oh my gosh. So that answers the question of where the sand thing. So I was actually going to bring that up later in the show, was that we heard that the not pink Pixel 3 was going to be called sand. And well, we heard that from Roland over at WinFuture, and obviously ended up not being true. But he must have heard that the Google Home Hub was going to come in a sand variant. And that makes so much sense. I love that. I love that model, and I love the mint model, and I definitely want one. And at 149, that was another thing. I mean, we already knew the price, but 149, this thing's a steal. And sidebar, the original Google Home is still 129, which is kind of dumb. Like, we have the Google Home and the Google Home Hub of the lineup now with $20 difference. I can't think. Can you think of any situation where someone should buy the original Google Home over the Google Home Hub?
No, not at all.
We don't really know what the speakers are like on the Google Home Hub yet. We haven't really gotten a chance to test those out. So.
And as for the specs, it just says full range speakers at 80 decibels. So. Unlike with the Home Max, they didn't do the direct comparison with the regular Home or the regular Home Mini. So we'll have to test it out in person.
Yeah. The other thing about Google Home Hub that was so awesome is Home View, as I already mentioned. And it basically turns your Home Hub into a hub for all your smart home stuff. You can control, I mean, you already could, you know, Assistant's been slowly building out support for lots of smart home stuff, but this is basically giving you like a single screen that you can have in your kitchen, and everything, all the controls for your house. Google is primarily obviously focusing on Nest because Nest is their first party offerings. In the demos yesterday, they specifically demoed the Nest Yale lock. They demoed the Nest Cam. They demoed the Nest Thermostat. And they showed how HomeView integrates with all that and how the different sections of HomeView can let you control all of those things. But what was interesting was they're doing it on the phone too. So Google Home app got an update, and it's a big update. It's a really big deal. If you have a lot of home stuff in your home, it shows you everything all on the home screen. So I actually haven't gotten the update on my Pixel. I'm on the Android side yet because Google's stage rollouts, I guess. Yeah. But on the iOS side, I'll show it actually. I have tons of smart home stuff because that's what we do, is we review Google stuff. I'll show it actually, I have a Nest Cam outdoor. Man, this is not really going well. Can't really see. There we go.
Yep.
A Nest Cam outdoor. I've got a Google Home in the bathroom. I've got TVs. Well, what do I have? A bedroom TV and a bedroom speaker. And then it shows all of my, Nest thermostat. And then it shows the Nest Secure or Nest Guard in all the different rooms. So it just gives you this one page view of all of the stuff that you have in your house and gives you kind of an overview. Yeah. And then you can control everything from there, just like on the home view, on the home hub. So it's really awesome.
And the most important thing is they organize it by location, which is something that makes way more sense to users than like a long list of devices.
Yeah, actually, that's something that's been, I don't know how to describe it, but it's kind of confusing with Assistant until now, I guess, was that all those settings for like setting all that up is like deeply buried in menus. Mm-hmm. If you're an average user trying to use Assistant and trying to control, I mean, like that's the room locations is part of how it knows. If you say play so-and-so song in the bathroom, it knows to play it on the Google Home that's called whatever you want to call it.
That's located in the bath. You can assign location.
You can call you can call the Google Home whatever you want to call it, but you also assign it a location. And so whenever you want to play something somewhere, you can either say play it on the speaker's name, or you can say play it in this room. And those settings were, until now, really deeply buried in the Assistant settings. And so that's one thing. I mean, it's kind of interesting to see, like, people now, after the last couple of years of Google rolling out smart home stuff's becoming more ubiquitous. People have smart plugs and smart cameras and Nest stuff and Philips Hue bulbs and stuff, now that it's starting to become ubiquitous and there's more people that have more stuff, it's kind of moving to the forefront. Whereas, honestly, this page being the homepage of the Google Home app wouldn't have made sense a couple of years ago, because it would be blank for most people, if we're honest, unless you wanted to build it out and build your collection of smart home stuff. I like it a lot. And also on the homepage now, is this new that you can broadcast from like there's a button that lets you broadcast? That is that new?
Yep. Shortcut.
Yeah. So
nice shortcut.
Yeah. Nice little shortcuts at the top too. So yeah, I love that app update, and I love the home view on Google Home Hub. It's going to be interesting to see how well the thing sells, because I think it's like a no-brainer. Like, if you've even thought of buying a Google Home Hub or Google Home before, like, this is what you should buy.
I really want to know so the Home Mini is $49. That's like the best seller. How much can they cut the price? It's like what I'm really interested in with the Home Hub. Can they get it sub 100 like 2 years from now? Because that would be amazing. That would just wipe out Amazon's competing devices. The pricing is so important if you want to reflate the market to devices. Yeah.
I thought one thing that was interesting that they brought up was the camera situation.
Yes.
So like, it doesn't have a camera, and they specifically mentioned on stage
for privacy reasons, so that there's no concern or question whatsoever. It's smart. That's what I was speculating earlier when
they kind of touted it like it was a feature. They were like, "This is our smart display, and by the way, it has no camera." And it's like applause. It's like, that's awesome. Like, great to hear that.
I saw somebody on Twitter comment this, but Facebook announcing the portal the day before Google made for such a good contrast.
In terms of, absolutely.
This one company, the conspiracy theory that Facebook is listening to you when you have the app open or whatever that insane theory is, versus no, that you spying cannot be done visually on the home hub. So
I think that basically I don't know, like it would be a hard sell for the bedroom if there was a camera on it, I think, for obvious reasons. I think that makes people a little nervous, even if you have a indicator light or whatever on it. Like, the chance, you know, people who aren't technologically as savvy, they might not understand that it's technologically very unlikely that someone would tap into your camera, so to speak. And so if they don't, you know, if you don't understand the inner workings of how these things work, that might be a misconception that you have, even though I guess theoretically in the real world, it's also possible that that could happen if there were some kind of, you know, some kind of breach. But it's obviously very unlikely. So for instance, in my home, we have a Nest Cam in the living room, and I'm never like worried about it like recording me or whatever. I know, or I feel probably 99% confident that if I look at it and the green light's not on, it's not watching me. My wife is not the same way. She feels she's a little bit more wary of it. Kind of like, you know, if we have like friends over or whatever, or we're having like, you know, if we're having a more serious conversation with friends or family or whatever, she'll like, you know, want to turn it away from us so that, you know, it couldn't record us or hear us, you know, not that it would, but, you know, on the off chance, you know, it's like she has more of that instinct to like, that makes me uneasy. And I think Google's aware of that. And that's kind of what I'm getting at, is that, you know, that's even the living room, forget the bedroom. Like, that's not even that's a whole other scenario. But I think it's great. And one of the demos, Google did three demos of Google Home Hub yesterday. They did Google Home Hub in the kitchen, and they showed, you know, recipes and all that stuff. They did Google Home Hub in the living room, and they showed, you know, more of the smart home control stuff, locking the doors and all that. And then they did Google Home in the bedroom, which was more playing music and is that right?
Wind, I can't remember. Yeah, playing music.
Yeah, like winding down and stuff. So they made a case like, no, this is not just a kitchen counter product. They made that a point. And that wouldn't have been as easy to do if there was a camera on it, I think.
Yeah. And it's such a sharp contrast to like where all these people who have like Amazon Echo shows, they say, they proclaim that they use it in the kitchen all the time. And like companies, Amazon has definitely leaned into that by building an Echo with a larger screen. And it's interesting to see Google go to 7 inches on purposefully.
Right.
Going against all their partners with 8-inch and 10-inch devices. They have a clear, concise idea for what they want to do with this, and that the screen plays an important role in that.
Yeah, on a macro level, I really think that what you mentioned about Facebook and how that timing played out is really important. I think that bigger portal, the large portal, man, that looks like a creepy spy device to most people. Like, it looks like, I don't know, like it's super, I don't know.
It belongs in the conference room. It's like, it's probably the best conferencing speaker device you can ever get, but people don't want that in their home.
Yeah. And I think the contrast is that the Home Hub just looks so cute and friendly, and like, you know, the fabric design is way better than I expected to be. And it definitely fits in the Home family alongside, you know, the Home Mini, and like, they really push this design, you know, this design language message about the fabric really fitting in with your home and whatever. And even with a screen on it, I wasn't expecting it to. I thought this was kind of thing. I thought it was going to be kind of like a sore thumb kind of thing compared to the rest of the Google Homes, but I was impressed. Any more thoughts on Home Hub before we move on to Pixel Slate?
So it's 149 and coming out October 22nd. And for a limited time, you'll get YouTube Premium for 6 months. So that's That's a nice promo.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, I'm probably going to buy like 5 of them and replace all my Google Homes with them. yeah. So Pixel Slate, by the way, I just want to mention, if anyone has any questions, feel free to drop them in the chat on YouTube. But one person actually, we can start off our Pixel Slate conversation. One person asked, is it true that the Pixel Slate is as laggy as people say? Yeah, so we got a chance to see the Pixel Slate a day before the event. We got to sit down with a couple of guys from the Pixel Slate team, software and hardware, and we got to touch it and check it out and give it an early test run before the hecticness of the event itself. And honestly, within our 45-minute demo, I'll let you give your take. My take was this: the hardware is really, really nice. One thing I can say negatively about the hardware is the back seems to kind of get smudged up with oily fingers really easily, kind of like a lot of people have said about the soft touch back of the Black Pixel 3. So that's a thing. But other than that, I think the keyboard is really, really, really nice. I really like the quiet typing compared to this. This MacBook Pro tick, 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 tick. So I like that. And the hardware itself, the specs are everything we thought they were. And I think the display looks really nice. I think that the size is probably too big for most people that want to use it primarily as a tablet. And yeah, I haven't really developed any really comprehensive thoughts on the Pixel Slate because I'm still trying to process it, I think. But my initial take on this, on the hardware, is it looks good. Like, it's like kind of how I felt about the first Pixel. That's kind of the best comparison I would draw. When I came away from looking at the first Pixel, I was like, clearly they were really thoughtful in a lot of ways, but it's not like this is jaw-droppingly amazing or gorgeous. Like, it's kind of like this is a functional design. They obviously gave it some thought and it's really nice looking. And then on the software side, my TLDR take is it seems like they're rushing to make this thing performant before launch, because based on our little 30 minutes with it, it seemed like it was a little bit of a laggy mess, as you've seen in other hands-on.
Okay.
Talking
about the software first, you can make any Chrome OS, any Chromebook device feel slow by switching to the beta or dev channel. Some releases in the beta channel are better than others, but most of them are like dev channel, in which they're laggy and slow and touch input isn't one-to-one. It's all those things. And these devices that are in the hands-on area are not the final software. Final hardware, obviously, but it definitely seems like Google has a few more weeks out to polish the software. The demo units, they're running Chrome OS 71. That is 7 to 8 weeks away before it actually releases. So if you want to get the timeline of how far away the Pixel Slate might be from launching, the only thing Google gave us was that it's coming out at the end of the year, I think. So
before the end of the year or later this year, something. Yeah.
Yeah.
In time for Christmas, likely, but not.
Yeah. I think the Pixel C had the same pattern with that. But would that be...
Google Home Max too, by the way.
Yes. With that being said, it's easy to say it's an issue of software, but when you're looking at the specs from a pure spec standpoint, we have to consider that the hardware and the processors might not be enough to power it. So do you want to start talking about the actual specs of the device?
Yeah, so just a quick rundown. There's 5 variants, which is another thing that we can talk about. We kind of knew this last week when we had the pre-show talk, where we thought, or at least the benchmark leak said there were 4 variants. There are 5. It's all the way from a Celeron to an M3, and then, wait, no, 2 Celerons, right? And then an M3, and then an i5 and i7, or is it?
Yes, you got it.
Yeah, so 2 different Celerons with, I think, 4 gigs and 8 gigs of RAM. Yes. And then up to an M3 with 8 gigs, and then an i5 with 8 gigs, and then an i7 with 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's $1,599 or $599 all the way up to $1,599, which we actually asked them in our little interview, kind of like, it's going to be hard for us as reviewers, like looking at this device and using the Celeron with 4 gigs model and trying to see like how well it performs, and then being like, you know, if we were like, oh, well, this thing performs like trash and there's no way Apple or Google's going to be able to optimize it, or it doesn't seem like it's going to be easy to fix on the software side of things. You know, it's like that doesn't do people who might be considering the $1,000 model or the $1,599 model any good to know how well the Celeron model performs. We'll probably get the review note. We don't know. It'll probably be coming in a week or a few weeks. And it'll probably be something like the middle model. So it's like, yeah, hopefully that'll give us an idea of like both ends of the spectrum maybe, or maybe we'll get two. I don't know. We'll see. But their answer to that question was, as you know, like to us, they said, like, as you know, Chrome OS is available on devices with trash CPUs with like a gig of RAM. And even on those devices, like, or not a gig of RAM, but like, you know, like,
yeah, it was 2 gigs for a long time, and then they started moving to 4.
Yeah, I was exaggerating that. We just know there's trash Chrome OS laptops in the market, like low end, like $100, $200 education level laptops, and Chrome OS is optimized to run well on those, and it runs fine. And so their point was like, yeah, even on the Celeron at 4 gigs, we should be able to, and we are optimizing the software to be, you know, as up to par and performing well as you would expect, like a baseline. And then it's like, yeah, the way they angled it was like everything other than that, the $1,000 extra that you can spend is all just bonus. Interestingly, I'll say this, they told us like the model they use on the daily is the Celeron model with 8 gigs of RAM or 4 gigs of RAM. And that's the model that they use. So I think we can confidently say that, you know, I think we should expect that those lowest end models will be perfectly, perfectly fine.
Yeah,
we'll see. But you know, like I mentioned, software feels like it's canary build right now. But you know, it's not. We're still a couple months away, probably, from launch. So that's fun.
As for my hardware thoughts, like you said, I think it's too big. I'm in the camp that wants a smaller, compact device, and I think 12.3 inches is just a bit too large to even to carry around really comfortably and really compactly.
It's pretty heavy. I tried to hold it with one hand while I was taking videos and stuff, and it was pretty hefty. I had to flex those blogger muscles really, really hard to pick that thing up.
Then when you factor in the case keyboard, it's a sizable weight.
Yeah, for sure it is. And the thing is, like, thankfully at least all the variants are exactly the same hardware as we expected. Mm-hmm. So at least we know what to expect with that. And I think for me, the laptop use case is probably a better, I don't know, it probably makes more sense for the size. I think if I were to have the device, I would use it in laptop mode like 90% of the time. And then the other 10%, I would detach it and use it as a tablet, because it's very similar to the iPad Pro. If you use the iPad Pro 12.9, it's just a little bit, you know, it's big. One of the marketing images that they gave us before it was announced was of a guy sitting on a couch holding it, you know, like with both hands sitting in his lap. And I think that works. That works. But carrying it around is like, you know, it's a little bit much.
Yeah, it's like I wouldn't with a 9.7-inch iPad, or heck, even the Pixel C, I would just carry it around. But it's something like this, I feel like I need to put in a bag, maybe a messenger or backpack. That's the sizing you're dealing with. I guess carrying it around the house is less of an issue, but if you're taking it out the door, you would want that added protection, be it a case or better yet, putting it in the bag.
Yeah. I don't know. I think branding it and angling it as a tablet primarily just maybe, I mean, it doesn't really make sense. It seems like it's primarily like a Surface Pro. Like it's like primarily a convertible, or it's primarily like,
yeah,
it's like a laptop, and then you can detach it and use it as a tablet, but they can't, I guess you can't market it that way if you're selling it for $599 with a $199 tacked on accessory fee to get the keyboard. You know, it's like, I don't know.
Accessory fee. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about that, by the way? What do you think about the keyboard?
The keyboard. I like the keyboard, the keys. So, the keys are rounded and it feels nice to type on, but it'll take you a while to get used to the rounded keys. The team, the Googlers you talked about, they noted how they purposefully rounded the keys so that
they said they found that it helped people type more accurately because you're more intentional about which key you're aiming for, and so they found it actually helped people type faster.
And people, they have a tendency to tap at the very edges of the square keys.
Right. Yeah, I actually have, so this Logitech keyboard.
Yes.
I've mentioned this many, many times. If you have lots of phones or you review phones, this is great because it has this like, you know, this thing right here where you can set all your devices in, even tablets. Sometimes at one point I had like 5 phones in this with like an iPad as well. Like it's great. But yeah, it has rounded keys, very similar to the Whiskers / Google Pixel Slate keyboard. They're right. There's a learning curve. And I don't know if it's a learning curve. It takes a little while to get used to. Like I actually did find the first couple weeks using it that I was missing the keys because, you know, there's less surface area to hit because they're not squares.
Nicer though. Objectively looks nicer.
Yeah, I would say that. I would agree with that. I don't know. Yeah, we don't really have, it's going to take like a couple of weeks playing with the device in person to really develop any valuable insights. This is all just like based on like, we had 30 minutes with it Monday and we had like, I don't know, almost nearly 0 minutes with it yesterday because you can't really have any quality time with it when, you know, there's only so many devices and people are bumping into you and you're just trying to capture. I mean, in my case, I was just trying to capture video footage to put together a hands-on montage. You know, I didn't have time to really, you know, pay attention. But yeah, I think, I don't know. I'm excited in the sense that I really want Chrome OS on tablets to be great. And I really want a great Chrome OS tablet. And if it is that, if it ends up being that, whenever the software is more finished, then I will be very happy. Yeah, I mean, it would also be nice if there was like a 9.5 inch version.
Yeah. Well, if Google does need an iPad competitor. They need a $329 iPad competitor. If there is no Android tablets, they need a traditional content consumption device. So who knows? Maybe they could make a Pixel tablet that still runs Chrome OS, but is consumer focused. That's just people watching videos and not necessarily having a keyboard accessory. Who knows? Maybe that'll happen made by Google Plus 5, but I think there is
Google Pixel Slate Mini next year.
Mini, that's a good one. But yeah, I think there is the Pixel Slate veers towards productivity. And there is still space on the lower end for a traditional content consumption device.
Yeah, I guess so. At the same time, phones are getting big enough that,
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like the iPad Mini, for instance, has been completely cannibalized by the bigger iPhone because people consume vast majority of their content on their phone, and so they don't need some kind of like smaller tablet. Or, you know, this doesn't make sense to have one. But yeah, I think that pretty much rounds out our thoughts on Pixel Slate. I can't think of anything really other than that to talk about. Yeah, I think long story short, hardware is really, really nice. And Chrome OS 71 as of Monday feels a little bit like it needs some polishing. That's fine.
One thing I want to go back to, actually, you described the Pixel Slate as feeling like the original Google Pixel in terms of hardware. How would you what did you feel when you used the Pixelbook last year for the first time?
I felt the same way. I would say largely the same. Like I would, I mean, obviously last year, for instance, you know, it's like the sense of just like, this is good, like good quality, it will probably be reliable. There's nothing amazing or something, anything like really to praise about it. It just seems good. If that makes sense. With the Pixelbook, the thing was like, it felt a little bit bulky or a little bit, you know, it lacked the sleekness, I think, of some other laptops, if that makes sense. I like, for instance, the bezels are like really big. It kind of felt a little bit heavy and a little bit blocky to me. But, you know, those are not like, I don't know, those aren't objectively bad things. It's just like, it's not as sleek and hot as it should be in 2018, if that makes sense. That's kind of how I feel about it.
And then if there's a new iPad coming out at the end of the month, that's going to be different. That's going to change.
Yeah, I think the iPad is going to be like app. It's going to look like sexy. It's going to look like really sleek and modern and slim, and the bezels are going to be tiny. And so it's kind of unfortunate that, so like Kyle thinks that what happened with this Meowth Nocturne thing is like, was like a very last minute thing. And is part of why it hasn't, like Pixel Slate hasn't gone through the FCC yet. And it was all Intel's fault. I mean, that's the running theory, is that that's why it's behind. And if that's the case, that sucks, because after the new iPads launch, the Pixel Slate, I feel like, is going to have a hard time getting any attention.
I think I want to close this out by saying you're buying a Pixel Slate because it runs Chrome OS. You're not buying it for the hardware, because this is a first-gen product. As we see with the Pixel 3, Google does get better design over time, but you're buying a Pixel Slate because you prefer Chrome OS as an operating system.
Yeah, and on that note, I think Chrome OS still needs work on tablets. The touch interfaces and the entire UI just feels a little bit, like, still feels like it was primarily made for laptops, which it was. Mm-hmm. I think there's just like a fluidity aspect of using the UI that should be better. It feels kind of hokey to me a little bit.
It feels like a web app.
It kind of feels like a web app. It just doesn't feel natural. Even though they have made significant improvements since the Pixel C launched. If they had tried to put this on the Pixel C or pick whatever, what was Chrome OS when Pixel C launched? Chrome OS 40?
I don't know. No idea.
All right. Yeah. So that's all our thoughts on the Pixel Slate. We'll have more for you in the coming weeks. I guess we'll round out the show now with the Pixel 3. We have plenty to talk about with Pixel 3, Pixel 3 XL, Pixel Stand. So we knew pretty much everything. That's the long story short. We knew all the specs. We knew, I mean, both of the devices, obviously they're real. There was no third phone, unsurprisingly. Even the camera features, like Google was teasing, like there were some like secrets and stuff, but Monday night we managed to publish the camera features, or the vast majority of them. Funny story, we actually knew about Night Sight, but we thought in the spec or the sheet that we were looking at that it was just like
the existing
like dark, like, yeah, dark,
low,
yeah,
light, low, camera,
low light camera performance. And so we excluded it from our story, because we were like, well, duh, of course all the Pixels are going to have, by the way, we know Nightsight is going to come to all the Pixels.
Yes.
And that was another reason we were like, okay, yeah, of course all the Pixels have good low light. Like, why is that notable? But it ended up being one of the big things. But yeah, there's like a bunch of camera features that we knew about only the night before, like the Super Res Zoom, which we actually found out, it's an interesting note on Super Res Zoom. Super Res Zoom was kind of soft introduced last year with the Google Pixel 2. Mm-hmm. They were already using an AI super resolution kind of algorithm to improve the
zooming, smooth zooming.
Yeah, but this year it's like a marketing thing. It's like, not only is it like a feature, it's like, no, like this is where it's at the forefront. Yeah.
It takes multiple images so that when you zoom in, it's a better quality, as the name suggests. But yeah, that's it.
the guy on stage had that flub about Mars or something and how, yeah.
In the technique is used in astronomy and other sciences.
Yeah. So that was that. What else was new? Call screen. Why don't you talk about call screen? That was brand new. That was one of the very few secrets that, well, not brand new. Actually, you can give us the context for why we knew some little tidbits about that.
So a few months ago, we saw in the Google Phone app that they were working on a call screening feature that it described what we saw as call screen yesterday perfectly. It's this feature that allows you to see real-time transcripts of the phone coming in and offer suggestion and allows you as a user to dictate what the system says back. But from what we knew a few months ago and from what we knew yesterday, we did not realize that this was an assistant-branded feature. There was no mention, no sign that call screen was an assistant-branded feature. And in retrospect, it makes sense to put assistant on everything. But this was kind of out of left field in terms of how they were integrating it, how they were branding it and marketing it. But it's a very cool feature that allows you to see ahead of time and allows you to avoid having to interact with actual calls, but still getting more information and contacts if necessary.
Avoiding having to interact with actual people. So I asked them, like, how is call screen related to Duplex? Because Duplex launching was a separate announcement. Duplex is launching in a couple months, right? They said that on stage. Select locations. But call screen, they said it's Google Duplex call screen uses similar technologies that Google Duplex uses.
Mm-hmm.
The same technology is being utilized, but it is not in and of itself. You couldn't say it's under the umbrella of Google Duplex. That's kind of the question I was asking.
Yeah.
Is Google Duplex the overarching thing? And then there's other little things under it that use Google Duplex. And he was like, no, it's a parallel kind of like separate thing.
Yeah. So call screen works on device. It's completely on device machine learning. Whereas we've seen with Duplex, if it fails, it's a call center ready to take on the call to finish your action. So Duplex is very much more still a server-side technology that requires people to step in.
Right. But yeah, we got a demo of that. You can check that out over at the site. It's exactly what it says it is, and it's pretty impressive. It probably got the most gasps of anything at the event, right? It got the most applause.
Let's talk about the event actually. Or do you want to finish up the Pixel 3 discussion?
Yeah, let's start out. Let's stop. Let's finish out Pixel 3, and then let's talk about the event as a whole.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So let's talk about let's talk about the colors. We spent some time on the home hub talking about the colors. Three colors, black, white, and not pink, just the actual name. And that is your favorite, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And specifically, so like we mentioned on Alphabet Scoop a few weeks ago that there was going to be a red this year. And I'm pretty sure that this not pink is what our source knew about it. It isn't red, and it's also not pink either, obviously, but it is, you know, close enough. And especially with one of the Google Fabric, so one of the Fabric cases for the Pixel 3 XL that is, like, they have four new cases this year with four new colors, and one of them is, like, a dark red or darkish red. And putting that darkish red on the not pink Pixel 3 is, like, the closest we've gotten to a red Pixel 3. And it's really nice. I mean, I think it looks really good. It's my personal favorite of the bunch this year, I think. Talking about Pixel 3 as a whole, I mean, the colors are nice. The design is nice. It feels way more polished than last year. And I wrote my first thoughts over at 9to5Google, if you want to go read them. But the headline I wrote was, it was that these phones are initially delightful in a way that I didn't feel the Pixel 2 was. So like, and what I mean by that is I picked them up and they felt like a complete thought. They felt like they were well polished. They felt like they were finished. They felt like they were planned from beginning to end, and everything, you know, all, like the entire, like last year, for instance, they had to make a decision between two phones at like last minute, not the last minute, but they decided between a larger Pixel 2 XL that had big bezels that was made by the same manufacturer as the smaller Pixel 2, or going with one that was contract manufactured by LG with an LG display. I think there were lots of different factors that were playing into the decision they made. For instance, potentially display sourcing was like a potential factor there. But yeah, last year, long story short, I felt like there were so many weird things about the Pixel 2 and 2 XL that just seemed like, I don't know, like discrepancies between them two. Like it just seemed like it wasn't polished. Like they didn't really know. I mean, or maybe not didn't know, but it just didn't seem like they were the phones they wanted them to be, if that makes sense. It felt like they were settling. Talking about that, like the smaller Pixel 2 had big bezels and the larger Pixel 2 had small bezels and the curve of the glass around the edge of the display. I've talked about this on and on and on for the last year. But long story short, this year I walked in, I touched both phones, you know, we did hands-on with them and everything. And they feel like the same way. I felt the same way coming out of it that I felt with the first two Pixels, where, you know, the hardware is not amazing. Like it's not like, in both specs and in visuals and aesthetics, like the iPhone is, I think better. The iPhone XS and XS Max are better in both like pure powerhouse terms, and in, you know, visual attractiveness. I would say the iPhone XS and XS Max are both better, but they're also way more expensive. And whereas the Pixel 3 and 3 XL, I feel like just like last year, or just like the original or the first two Pixels, they are good. They're good. And it's kind of like, you know, it's like they feel like a complete thought. They feel polished. Even if you disagree with some of the decisions, which obviously a lot of people disagree with the notch, and a lot of people now are making a big fuss about the soft touch back, especially on the black model, which is apparently very, very scratchable. People disagree with the decisions, and that's fine. Like I disagree with some of the decisions. Like I don't completely forgive them for launching a phone with a huge notch and a bottom chin. Like I don't completely forgive Google for that yet. But I disagree with the decision, but that doesn't mean that the phone itself as a whole is not polished. And so that's my feeling. That's my gut feeling coming out of the event. And I will say my first 24 hours using them is I like the actual experience of using the phones matches how I felt the first 24 hours using the Pixels, and not how I felt the first 24 hours of using the Pixel 2 and 2 XL. So what do you think?
Consistency goes a long way to make it look like you're competent.
Absolutely.
The curvature, the radiuses. Okay, obviously the front is different, the bezels, and between the small Pixel and the large Pixel 3 XL, it's obviously different. But if the displays are off, if you're just holding the device, it feels the same, but one is larger, one is smaller. The back is the same, the camera position is the same, which last year was weirdly annoying. And holding it, it's a nice premium feel. I was afraid that it was going to be a plastic back, but this glass back with a matte finish, even though there's a matte finish, it still feels premium. It feels glass. You're holding a cold glass-like device. It feels premium in the hand.
Yeah.
And that goes a long way for me personally, and maybe some other people. Just like the feeling of premium materials goes a long way to justifying how much it costs and to enjoying it, using it day to day.
Not to mention how it looks like side by side with the rest of the ecosystem. Like it fits in with the Google family of products really well.
I can't wait for a fabric back on the phone.
Well, we, I mean,
without a case.
The case isn't nice enough for you.
But that's digression.
I think to succinctly explain, maybe this will help people understand, because a lot of people think that this is all, I mean, like, people look at me, I think sometimes, and think like, oh, you're just super picky. Like, you're just picking this thing apart. Like with last year's phones, because, you know, I posted like 5 articles about how trash the 2XL's display was. And at the end of the day, I did my long-term review, the 6-month review or whatever. And I was like, the display is trash. I stand by that. I was right. But I was also kind of wrong, because it didn't, I think my emotional reaction at first was, this kills the phone for me. And in the long term, I think as hard as it was for the software to shine through the flaws of the screen and some other discrepancies with the hardware, like, it eventually did. And I realized, like, okay, Pixel 2 XL, if you just look at the Pixel 2 XL, is a great phone. So that was my long-term take. But with the initial launch, it was like, I felt like I couldn't really wholeheartedly recommend either phone. The small one, it was like, I can't wholeheartedly recommend it, because $649 for this hardware is like
old,
rough. Like, it's like really old looking hardware. Like, it looks kind of older than the original Pixel old. And so $649 for that one, like, was like really hard to justify. Not to mention the build quality just felt worse than the Pixel 2 XL. I don't know if you felt that. I think most people felt that. At least to me. And then the larger one, and the small one had a great display. It had a Samsung panel, and it was like AMOLED, like, and it was like really great with none of the issues that the larger one had. The larger one had the really, really nice design, the modern looking design. It was the front page on the Google store. It was $849, which was expensive, but it wasn't outrageous for a nice flagship premium phone. But the display was just like a huge compromise. And so it was like, you know, neither phone felt like an obvious, like, duh, like, I can wholeheartedly recommend this device to you. I can recommend the Pixel 2 with XYZ compromises. I can recommend the Pixel 2 XL with XYZ compromises. But neither phone can I say that's a good phone. Every average consumer will not be disappointed with that phone, and they can probably stick with it for a few years. It will be a good value. It will be a good purchase as a consumer. I couldn't say that just like wholeheartedly about either phone. And my initial take after yesterday was that I think we will be able to say that about both the Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL, despite the fact that, you know, if you're just looking at specs, if you're just looking at the design, and you're just comparing it side by side with the iPhone or the iPhone XR or whatever, like, you're going to reach a different conclusion, because that's what you care about. You care about specs. But if you're looking at the whole ecosystem, if you're looking at how great Google's customer service has gotten lately, if you look at all the AI value adds that are coming this year and next year and the year after that to the Pixel 3, you know, the weighing the price is completely different than just comparing spec sheets. So yeah, how did you feel about the phones? I mean, I wrote that out. I wrote all of that out. That was like 1,000 words. What was your take on
the
phones in general?
I don't like using my Pixel 2. And this year, I think I'm going to like using my Pixel 3 a whole lot more. It's modern. It looks vaguely futuristic, though. I think I made the point before that it kind of looks like a Galaxy S8, 9, which is not a problem. Feels good. Looks good. Smooth in the hands. And I think I'll enjoy using my phone for the next year until new phones come out. So that goes a long way. That thought goes a long way.
Yeah, for sure. I think that I agree with the headline. I don't know. I don't remember where I saw it, but the headline that the Pixel 3, maybe it was David's take. David's take was Pixel 3, small Pixel 3 is going to be the contender for the best small phone of the year. And, you know, small in quotes, because it's not that small. But,
five inches.
This is the smaller Pixel 3. It is, I think, I completely agree with David. I think that it will be, in this size, I don't think that there's a better, based on my, you know, first day, I don't think there's a better phone in this size. And you're the target market.
Indeed I am. It's the same size as Pixel 2.
Yeah.
Which is shocking.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Another random thing that I didn't actually write in my initial take is the fingerprint sensor. So, well, not fingerprint sensor, the vibration motor. So I wrote about my initial thoughts on vibration motor, and it's like, there were lots of talk about this vibration motor being so much better, There was the Russian reviewer was like, better than the iPhone XS or whatever. Even my friend David Immel at Android Authority, he wrote the night before the event that he felt like the vibration motor was vastly improved or something. My take is that it's very, very slightly improved over the 2XL and the 2. And actually, so this is a weird thing, and I didn't mention this in my initial impressions post, but last year the smaller Pixel 2 felt like it had a worse vibration motor than the larger Pixel 2XL.
And
after playing with the phones yesterday, I think that very, 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 very slightly, the smaller Pixel 3 has a better vibration motor than the larger Pixel 3. And I think they probably have the same hardware. I think they have the exact same vibration motor, but
the location.
Not the location, but the smaller body makes the vibrations feel tighter and stiffer. Mm-hmm. And more tactile, and the larger body of the 3XL, the vibrations are spread across this is so stupid, and I know most people think this is probably the most dumb analysis ever, but the vibrations are spread across a larger surface area, and so what you feel in the hand is less, just ever so slightly. So that's my Pixel 3 and 3XL vibration motor take. I'll have more on in the final review. But
and after you see teardowns from iFixit, the physical location.
Yeah, that's another thing. There's still things, some secrets about the Pixel 3. We don't know who makes the display.
Yeah. Presumably it's LG, because Google sunk in close to $1 billion in sponsoring an LG production facility for OLED displays, but yeah, there is concrete proof from DisplayMate that this is a better screen, A+. I think, I'm not sure if it was during a briefing or it was on stage, somebody said that both of them have good displays now. That's a funny line.
Yeah.
Acknowledgement.
It's true. It's true. They both have good displays now. I none of the issues that I noticed immediately last year. Like last year, it was immediately like the blue shift with the demo units at the event just hit you in the face immediately. Like it was not even like later view units, later control got better, I think. But those units at the event, man, they were rough. Like it looked like you were looking at a Smurf. Yeah, so I mean, and then the graininess too. I remember the grain issue. I don't know if you remember that. You never really used the Pixel 2 XL that much, did you?
I have one. I see the grain.
Okay. Yeah.
I hate
the grain is rough still. But on the Pixel 3 XL, another thing, like I looked at it, it looks like these displays, my initial impression on the displays, Pixel 3 and 3 XL, they are up to par with the iPhone XS. Or iPhone X, at least iPhone X. I haven't seen the iPhone XS in person yet, but I think they're up there. So, in terms of quality, And then Pixel Stand. I guess we can talk about Pixel Stand real quick. I'd say
that's a big surprise.
Really?
Yeah, because it ended up being way more powerful than we thought it would be. So the Google app revealed these like animations of a white background display, but in reality it's closer to the ambient always on display. It displays the clock, it displays suggestions against a black background with minimal white text. So it's more subtle. I think the power and the utility comes from Assistant, and I don't think that was obvious in any of the leaks as much. So you have the time on top, and at the bottom you have these shortcuts that suggest contextual actions depending on the time of day. There's quick access to Assistant, and it's also the ability to jump into Google's new Assistant's new updates feature, which is similar to Google Now that already rolled out. And I think this is a reason to get the Pixel 3. It's a shame that the Google Store pre-order. What did I say?
Pixel Slate.
Pixel 3.
I don't think you can dock the Pixel Slate on a Pixel Stand, although that would be a very funny stock image. And I will take it for the site.
I think it's the idea. We've discussed this in person, the idea of ambient computing, of just having Well, it's a smart display, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It's the idea of having contextual information there for you without you explicitly asking for it. And I hope it becomes more powerful, it becomes more like a smart display in the future. But from what we have right now, it's a very good start. It's a powerful start.
Yeah, speaking of power, it's fast wireless charging too.
Yeah. The design is interesting. It's all white with a nice orange background.
I don't really like the look of it, really. It's kind of generic to me. I don't know.
Yeah, when we discussed with the product teams, they basically admitted how it's white to match all the colors because white works with everything.
Yeah, it makes sense. Although the bottom of it is that silicone kind of padding at the bottom, just like the Google Home Hub and a lot of other things, Google Home Mini as well, and a lot of these other products. And it's orange, it's bright orange on the bottom. So that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I guess that pretty much rounds up everything they announced. What did they not announce? They did not announce a Pixel Watch. They did not announce a Pixel Ultra. They did not announce a Pixelbook 2.
Yes.
Which is somewhat surprising. Not really. I mean, kind of. But it's surprising in the sense that Atlas has been showing up in, Chromium for several months. Like, we almost know, well, we don't know as much about it, but we've been seeing Atlas for quite a long time. And so it seemed like, I guess with Google, it's like, if they don't announce it this year, it's like, well, see you next year. It's like, as far as we know, they just do one annual event, and that could change. But as far as we know, that's how it works. And so it's like, well, I guess we'll see the Pixelbook 2 next year. Like, that'll be on our rumor roundup in 12 months. Like,
I never thought it was going to launch at this event too soon. 2 year cycles. Maybe. It's probably what's going to happen in the Pixel set as well. Adopt a 2 year cycle.
Yeah. Another thing, Evan Blass originally tweeted that he heard that there was going to be new Pixel Buds at this event, which is half true, 50%
true. Yes. What we ended up getting, $30 wired USB-C Pixel Bud kind of things. So they're wired headphones. The surface isn't touch sensitive. There's a pill-shaped controller on the cord, which is fine, honestly. I'm excited for these. I've been meaning to get USB-C headphones just in case, and now they're here.
Yeah, they will come in the box with every Google Pixel. That was another question we had. We didn't know if they were going to be an international thing or if they were going to be only in countries that mandate their inclusion, but it seems to be everything. I guess that pretty much rounds up everything that's new. There was a bunch of stuff on the side. Bridge, they announced their keyboard accessories for the Pixel Slate. Several manufacturers, your usual case manufacturers, all announced accessories for Pixel 3 and 3 XL. Google announced they introduced the new fabric cases. It felt like there was so much minor stuff that just... We didn't mention the new Pixelbook Pen in Midnight Blue to match the Pixel Slate. Lots of stuff, but those were the three things: the Pixel Slate, the Google Home Hub, and the Pixel 3 and 3 XL. Interestingly, the image they used for the Pixel 3 had, it was like black on the top to hide the notch, and they didn't even include that. They didn't even include that wallpaper on. That was the biggest disappointment of the event. I saw that on stage, and I was like, I want that wallpaper, and it's not even on the Pixel 3. So. I know Google contracts with some third party company to work on the wallpapers or do the wallpapers app. It's
us two, at least for the live, for the come alive wallpapers, the colorful ones. The people who make Monument Valley and the Android, the Wear OS watch faces. They're usually
gotcha.
Good.
Yeah. So yeah, they need to hop on it and they need to add that wallpaper in real quick. what were your thoughts on the event? Let's wrap this up talking about the event as a whole. We could talk about how Google leaked everything in 5 minutes before the event started.
Yeah, that's unlisted YouTube video that got out ahead of time and it confirmed everything. But also the event, they announced everything at the top, which was super odd from a logistics standpoint for us. Like, They announced everything at the top, spent like 5 minutes talking about AI and software before jumping into the first product, which was kind of weird. I'm not sure if that was because everything leaked or if that was always the format they're going to go with, but it felt super odd.
It seemed like that was because everything leaked, you know, because otherwise what you're doing is you're building excitement throughout the announcements, like, you know, trying to like, you know, build up to the most important thing, which in this case, the last thing announced was the Pixel 3. And in a normal year, the last thing announced would be the phones because that's what people are most excited about. But that didn't really make sense this year because it was like that was the thing that was the most leaked. So they started out like he started it out with like the very, very first thing that Rick said was, this is the Pixel 3 and like a huge, like,
yeah,
gorgeous render of the not pink model float across the screen. It was like, well, that's it. That's that.
I mentioned this to our team yesterday. The event felt really consumer focused, public focused. It was
the stream itself.
Yeah, the entire keynote. It felt like they were talking. They were trying to create a presentation that worked for everybody, rather than the more technical focused people. There's an emphasis on the wow features, on getting shock moments in there. Applaud moments.
Yeah, I think that's normal in a sense. I think all the company, you know, Apple does that for sure. Yeah. Google's done that, but it might have been, you know, exaggerated this year because of the leaks. That might be another thing. Is like, you know, I think part of the press event sometimes is like educating the press. You know, like part of the event. And this year, there was absolutely no need to educate the press on anything.
Yeah, all of us had pre-writes up and ready.
Yeah, and even the people who didn't have embargoes at all, like no embargoes, were probably completely
in the loop.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of the event space, though, for like the hands-on space and everything, like it was great. Like I think it might be the best hands-on. Well, I don't know. It's a mixed bag. It was great in a way, and it was bad in a way. I mean, because for instance, the Pixel 3 demo area was just a wall with like 30 phones on it. And so it makes sense in a way because it's like, I mean, I don't know. It was hectic because everyone was like grabbing phones, and Google, like, they're not going to police people and be like, you have 5 minutes left. You got to put the phone back on the wall or whatever. And so for the first like 2 hours, there were just zero phones on the wall because everyone had rushed in and grabbed them and walked away like to go get their super high res 1080p 4K footage or whatever. And so, yeah, if you weren't in there quickly, you were without a Pixel for a couple hours, and they didn't have more. It was like, that's it. This is all we got. You just got to wait around and walk around and just hope that you can get one from someone.
And why was there a basketball court? I never got that. There's a basketball.
Is one of the playground stickers basketball related?
Yeah,
I don't know. That was the playground demo area. So maybe there was some.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I wish it was held up. Yeah. AR, a rebrand of AR stickers, which will use AI to analyze the current scene and suggest the right stickers for you, which is kind of smart. It's clever. It's like a shot at Snapchat.
Yeah.
But, I lost my train of thought.
The food was good.
The food was good. Oh, yeah. I wish they held it on 10.4 so that they can consistently stay for the past 2 years. I saw no reason why they held it 1 week later. That was a minor thing, but consistency would have been nice.
Yeah, I mean, those kind of things can come down to when venues are available, you know?
That is true.
Yeah, this venue was interesting. It was probably at this venue, we walked in and we went to a check-in, and then we went to the sixth floor. Like the actual event happened on the sixth floor of the building. And you may have seen that in the stream because they, you know, in the live stream, they zoomed in, showed the window and showed outside. It was on the sixth floor. And then we had to go down a floor to go to the hands-on area.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the event, you know, everyone picked up all their stuff. And interestingly, this year, I think far more people walked away with from the event with Pixel phones in hand. So like last year, I think you were only going to get a phone at the event if you were like select few, if anyone. I don't remember actually if anyone got on. But this year they were like, well, screw it, you know, might as well just hand them out because they're out there. So yeah, I think is there any other thoughts we have on anything we didn't think about? We can real quick do some Q&A if anyone has any questions, touch on anything that we talked about. Pixel 3 prices starts at $799 for the smaller Pixel 3 and $899 for the larger. So
which I still think is expensive, but in terms
it's expensive.
Putting it quote making $100 difference to get the bigger display, that makes sense, but I think the starting price is too expensive.
Someone said, is there a free Pixel stand with Pixel 3 purchase from Google Store?
Strange, we know.
No, but you can get a Pixel stand from some...
from the carriers. The carriers are especially pushing a Pixel stand. But, but the Google Store thing is 3 to 6 months of free YouTube Premium, which...
Someone asks, does the Pixel stand enable home view? No, it doesn't. But that's an interesting idea. And we actually... you could just open the home app. That's the option. Someone asked, can the Pixel stand functions be used even with a normal wireless charger? Maybe you could talk a little bit to what they explained about the proprietary aspect of the wireless.
What's the question again?
The question was, can the Pixel stand functionality be used with a normal wireless charger?
That I am not sure of because...
Well, I'm sure of it. Because I actually have a phone right here, but the answer is no.
You can't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the reasoning is because the Google app actually authenticates each Pixel stand. That in Google Assistant settings, there's a new the stands you pair your phone with will show up. So that's like a security method, a level of security authentication.
Right. So it only works if you're docking it to the stand that you initially linked it up to.
Yeah. So
right.
It needs.
Yeah. And so there's like a, they added like a proprietary layer of technology on top of the Qi wireless standard.
Yes.
Which, you know, it does a bunch of things. One of them is it tells the phone that it's on a Pixel stand and not just any wireless charging dock, like you mentioned. So it only gives you the Pixel stand functionality if you actually put it on a Pixel stand. However, all Qi wireless chargers, will work just fine. Anyone else have any more questions? Feel free to drop a few questions in the chat if you do, and we will answer them before we sign off for the day. I think that's pretty much. Will Chromecast Ultra support multi-room audio? Probably. As of now, all we know about is the new 2018 Chromecast, and so maybe Chromecast Ultra will get a refresh next year. We don't know. So I think that's pretty much all we've got in terms of questions. No one seems to be asking anymore, so we'll just leave it at that for now. You should expect reviews of the Google Pixel 3 and Google 3 XL coming up relatively soon. I can't say exactly when, but soon. And it would make sense that they're soon, considering some reviews have already dropped, but they just weren't official, so to speak. Until you see Pixel 3 reviews, we'll chat more next week. You can tune in to Alphabet Scoop here every Friday. We live stream. Actually, we're streaming Wednesday today because we wanted to get this stream in after the event and give you some of our fresh thoughts. We publish every Saturday morning, but we'll be publishing this audio directly after this. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and over at 95google.com directly. Thanks for tuning in, as always. And thanks to Abner for joining me. And we'll see you next Friday. So we'll be a bit like a little bit late next week.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.